Welcome to Quilt and Tell, where quilters who love all aspects of the craft, from traditional and contemporary to art and modern, share their passion and perspectives on all things quilty. I'm Tracy Mooney.
I'm Lori Baker.
And I'm Ginger Sheehy Tatted.
Well, this episode is hot, hot, hot. Our guest is the quilter on fire herself, Brandi Maslowski. We just love her podcast and thought it would be fun to have her on our show. In fine finishes, well, I'm not sure we have ever had a more controversial topic since our discussion on which way to iron seams. Today, we are discussing using quilts to make garments, and is that acceptable? So please stay tuned for that spirited discussion. How are you both doing?
I am doing, I think I'm okay.
She left us on a ledge there. What's wrong? What's going on?
There seems like there's a story involved.
There is a story. I have quilt guild tonight, so I wanted to finish a quilt. Would you believe the tablet on my long arm died?
No.
No.
So I have to take an old quilt from December to quilt guild.
No, not that. Dang it. Goodness gracious.
These are retired worker problems.
Exactly. And Ginger and I are jealous.
Yes.
You know what broke on me this week?
What?
My hairdryer.
Oh.
And then in the same day, my hairdryer died, and then my Apple Watch almost seemed like it died. And I was freaking out. I'm like, no. So I just feel like something is in the air. I saved my watch, but my hairdryer is still dead.
It's gone. Yeah, that's
well, if one of them's going to be dead, you'd rather it was the hairdryer than the watch.
Do tell. Oh, yeah. Do tell. Mm-hmm. I did not realize how attached I am to my Apple Watch. Like, I was literally like, no. And then I, like, waited overnight, and then I rebooted it in the morning and somehow, like, did some combination of pressing buttons and it started up again. So
cool.
Whatever happened, I don't know, but clearly something is in the air.
All right, well, don't send it my way. I was like, technically everything seems to be working here, so keep it out where you're at.
So goodness, anything else that you're working on, Lori, that's exciting or happening?
The quilt that I talked about on our last podcast, mm-hmm. with the five patches, I have that quilt top a little over two-thirds of the way done, and it's really not going to be too bad.
See? Told you.
Yeah. It's going to be okay.
You put it up on your design wall, and then you panicked.
I did. And it's okay.
That happens sometimes. And I know, I told you, I was like, she sends us a picture, and I text her. I was like, I think you just need to walk away for a little bit.
Yeah.
Because it's really not as bad as you think.
Yes. And it really is. And I kind of laughed because I talked to my daughter and my son-in-law and two of my sons and Bake all that day while I was being, oh, it's ugly. And they were all, no, it's not. It's cool. Okay. I guess it's cool.
Yeah.
Yep. Sometimes just hearing that the outside perspective, man, it helps.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, and sometimes I just think our nose is a little too close. Mm-hmm. You know,
yeah,
you just need to walk away for a little bit and look at it again. I can't even tell you how many times I've made a quilt and thought it was terrible. And then when I look at it again, it has to be a while later. Yeah. I go, oh my gosh, why was I thinking this was terrible? This wasn't terrible, but you just need that space and time, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, I tried that with my quilt. The last week and a half, I've been unstitching. This was one I had started it. It's the Allies pattern that Heather Black, I had done this. It's for a quilt that I've been working on for our bedroom. And I had quilted it with like a variegated thread and did it once and didn't like it. Tried doing it a different direction after I had unstitched that. So that was the first time I unstitched it.
Oh, no.
And then did it again. And I let it sit for a good time. I mean, it's probably good 6 months, if not more than that. And finally was like, no, I still hate it. So I just went in and finally went and unstitched it all. And I think I was overthinking it and trying to make it bigger than it needed to be. So I'm going to just go in and do kind of just the matchstick. Actually, I had a question for you ladies, because I've put a border around it. Should I do the matchstick through the border or start it on the outside of the border with the quilting and then just leave the border plain? I'm trying to decide.
Lori, you go ahead first. Yeah. I have an answer too.
Okay.
If you do matchstick quilting, which is fairly tight, and don't quilt your border, your border's going to be it's not going to lay smooth because you have more quilting, which kind of sucks up a little bit of dimension.
Yep.
And then your border isn't going to have that, and it's going to be ruffly.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Good. So keep it all going, because I think that's going to be easier at the end of the day too. I had never done that with a border, so I wasn't sure how it would look or what it would look like. So I figured I'd ask the experts. Were you going to say the same thing, Tracy?
I'm going to add a little nuance to it, is that no matter what quilting you do, it should just be the density of the quilting should be even throughout. So it doesn't matter if you do the border in the same direction necessarily. It might sort of skew it. You have to be a little bit careful, but it just needs to be the same density across the quilt, if that makes sense. So it needs to be just as tight in the border that it is in the rest.
Well, I'm not unstitching it again, so I'm going to keep it simple. I'm doing it in the border, and I'm just going to get it done. So anyway, so it's actually been kind of nice. I've just been watching TV and unstitching and getting it done watching a lot of great football. So that's been good. So yeah. But how about you, Tracy? Anything exciting going on?
Not a dang thing. I'm still recovering, guys.
Oh,
like it has just been terrible. So I've been catching up with work. I've been working on my Ruby Jubilee blocks. I've been working on my secret log cabin project that I'm working on. And then, but it's been so little movement on sewing, just because after work I'm tired, or on the weekend, sometimes I just like collapse on the couch. So it is what it is, you know. And it'll be fine soon enough. I'm feeling a little better. So
good.
So that's
all. Well, you'll be happy to know I got my Ruby Jubilees. I got all of my blocks cut out in all denim. I was able to go through my denim stash. So I am going to have all denim blocks. I'm so excited.
Oh my gosh. That's going to be incredible.
Yes.
I can't wait. I am working on the next round. So it's the one that's not in the issue that's just coming out, but the next one. I like to, you know, test them. We put the photos in the thing, but also I try to follow the pattern along to make sure that the wording is correct. Every once in a while I'll catch a little thing like, oh, hey, that's too many triangles that you were asking them to cut out, or, you know, something like that. So it's kind of fun.
Yeah.
So, and I love seeing the photos. So now I've started going through the hashtag on Instagram and commenting, and I've had a couple of people like get surprised, like they respond and then they're like, oh, wait, I just realized who you are.
Yeah.
So it's been kind of fun, but I love seeing all the different colors.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of exciting.
Are you ready?
Oh, my goodness. I'm so, so excited.
All right. Well, let's go talk to the quilter on fire. Today in Open Studios, we are joined by Brandi Maslowski. Brandi is the host and producer of the Quilter on Fire podcast, the Q Creative Fiber Art membership, and the Q Talks lecture series. And she's also the author of a children's book that is called Christie's Quilt. Welcome to the show, Brandi.
Ladies, thank you so much for having me.
Oh my goodness. Well, I've been working on this for a while. So you and I got to meet, and actually you got to meet Lori too at Quilt Festival in Houston.
I know. I was so sad I wasn't there. For many reasons, but that definitely, when I found out that you guys all got to talk, I'm like, oh man.
I know. I forced Tracy to show me a picture of you online, and I said, I just need a face to go with that beautiful infectious laugh.
Oh Lord.
Yeah, I got to say, the whole time I was there, everybody I met, when they realized who I was and that I was on Quilt and Tull, they would always say, oh my gosh, Ginger, and her laugh. It was so sweet.
Yeah, I don't know if my husband feels the same about that. I think he's pretty sick of it, but I'm glad you ladies enjoy it.
Oh my gosh, yes. Well, and I got to spend a lot of time with you because you and I actually both got to room with Terry Lucas. We had an Airbnb, and it was just so much fun.
Oh my gosh. I was laughing and laughing and laughing with you guys.
Yeah. We kind of had fun. Yeah. And so I think I just want to start in so many ways. So at some point while we were there, you happened to mention that you had written a book. Mm-hmm. And I don't even know how I put this together, but you actually sent me the book to review years ago. And I have a very special attachment to this book because one of the characters is named Tracy.
Awesome.
And not only is her name Tracy, but at the time that you wrote this book and published it, Tracy and I had the same exact haircut because she's got she's got red hair and it was curly. And I'm pretty sure I wore that outfit in high school.
Did you wear your socks over your jeans like that?
I totally did. It was the 80s. It was a thing. and so I actually went and pulled out the book from my bookshelf because I was like, oh, Brandy's going to be on the show. I need to have the book in hand. And the next thing that happened that's really funny is it's a story about a little girl. And she knows a quilter. And the quilter has said that at their retreat the next year, this quilter would teach the young girl how to quilt. And so she waits, she gets to the retreat, and then the person who promised her is sick and isn't there. Yeah. And so she's really sad because she doesn't know what to do and how she's going to, you know, learn how to make a quilt, especially if she doesn't have any supplies. And she goes upstairs and she gets all forlorn, and then when she goes back downstairs, all of the quilters have contributed supplies to teach this young girl how to quilt. And the funny thing that I noticed today as I flipped through the book was that she has a Bernina waiting for her.
Oh, wow. That's almost fortune-telly.
That's my actual and Bernina.
Okay. So then that segues into the fact that you've just been named a Bernina ambassador for Canada.
Yes, yay. I have. It's so exciting. There's a whole group of us that have come together. I think they've chosen 5 so far out of 7. And we are so excited to get started because this is the first time it's the inaugural group of Bernina ambassadors in Canada. So we're pretty excited to have some fun this year.
Nice.
That is going to be amazing.
Yeah,
you are going to learn so much. It is going to be so much fun.
Yes, I can't wait. They are going to educate us, and then we're going to be able to turn and educate our, you know, the people who follow us. And yeah, it's going to be a big deal for me because I'm such an art quilter and I'm just a lifelong learner. So everything that they have to offer, I'm up for it.
Nice. And you're a big traveler too. So that's going to be a big part of it too, right?
I know. I do love traveling. And so every show that I go to, I will be able to hop into the Bernina booth and meet all the mm-hmm. people there and talk to people about it. There'll be a lot of opportunities for photo ops, that's for sure.
Right. So I usually ask our guests how you started quilting. Can you tell us a little bit about like how long you've been sewing and how that all began?
Yeah, of course. I have been quilting for over 30 years, and I started my very first stitches actually when I was about 11, 12 years old. And I skipped across the back lane to this flea market. And there was a woman who had a table there that had clothing for Cabbage Patch Kids. And now I know you guys remember Cabbage Patch Kids.
Yes,
but
we do.
When
I was in grade 7, this was the absolute craze. I had just gotten one for Christmas, and his name was Xavier. I had the adoption papers, everything. And so when I saw this booth, this lady's table full of cabbage patch quilts, I was milling around it. And finally she said, come over here and sit down. I will teach you. So she taught me how to hand stitch a little shirt for my cabbage patch kid. And
how nice.
I went every Sunday for the rest of the entire season. And by the end of that season, I had made a little shirt. And she sort of said goodbye to me with this wonderful gift. She gave me this fun fur bunting for my cabbage patch kid, which is a huge deal when you live in the central prairies of Canada with the deep freeze that we live through there. Mm-hmm. So yeah, she left me with that. And she really kind of sparked creativity in me. So that was my first stitches. But yeah, I have been quilting for over 30 years. And my very first quilt was actually after working in a craft store for about a year and a half. I had been the sample maker. And I was so excited to have this job because I could sit in the lunchroom and make samples all day long. And I ended up being allowed to cut fabric, which is a big deal. They don't let everyone mm-hmm. cut fabric, but I wasn't a quilter yet. A friend of mine asked me, can you make a quilt for my great-grandmother? And I thought, well, I could probably try. And that first quilt project actually led me into this world of quilting that I just love. And I've never looked back. It was a photo quilt with lace and floral fabrics. And it took me forever to put it together, but I figured it out and discovered the world of quilting.
Amazing.
Well, and it sounds like you didn't take it easy. That sounds like it was a mm-hmm. tough first quilt.
It was. Like even just putting those photos on fabric was a really difficult process. And it was back when you peeled it off and you messed it mm-hmm. up the first time. You had to yeah. try again and again, but yes. it turned out really good. I have that photo in my trunk show and people are always surprised. That was your first quilt. It was, right. it was tough.
Oh, we'll have to show that in the show notes.
For sure. Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how did you become the quilter on fire?
Well, I have had a full career as a firefighter and I recently just retired, but I've gone from firefighter to fiber artist. And so my whole trunk show is the story of that journey. And really for me, quilting has always been my creative escape. It's been my reprieve, my downtime, my calm, methodical motion to deal with all the troubles and everything that I saw in the fire department. So it really has been my creative escape.
Well, we have to do a shout out and a thank you because we just went through mm-hmm. a huge fire here in Colorado. And oh my goodness, that yeah. I don't know where we'd be without our firefighters. So oh thank you for your service on that. That's amazing.
I agree. And I love that you made it part of your brand. You know, yes. I feel like that's obviously such an important part of who you are. And it's become how we know you.
Yeah. And it really is kind of a cute little story because originally I started my business as Brandy Lynn Designs and I had the Explore Fiber blog and I had, you know, I had the Canadian Quilt Talk podcast way back in 2013. I did 100 episodes. And over time, I realized people really don't know who I am or what I'm doing. I'm everywhere. So I decided to rebrand and I was sitting down with my best friend and a couple, sort of my, you know, my inner circle. And I was like, what should I do here? And my girlfriend said, you know what? You are just on fire. Like you really just need to somehow, I was like, the quilter on fire. I just thought it fits so well. Firefighter to quilter. I couldn't even believe she said it out loud, but it just seemed to fit. So it was perfect.
Yes, I feel like you need that. This girl is on fire. You need that like in the background as you're going. Like that's what I envision.
Oh, believe me, that is my internal theme song every day.
Oh, yeah. It's gotta be.
Oh my gosh, I love that. Yeah. So tell us a little bit about like, what would you say your style of quilting is?
Well, I am a creative artsy fartsy art quilter through and through. I have been just exploring surface design and playing with fabric for decades. And I have over the years really dove into precision piecing and traditional quilting. And if I didn't know what a cathedral window was, I would make a cathedral window because I eventually became a quilt judge. And so I felt I needed to learn everything, but I always gravitate back to grabbing a pile of fabric, exploring color, and just tearing and ripping and stitching and painting and playing. So that's the kind of quilting that I do. So often when I teach, my courses are sort of geared around doing some kind of traditional quilting element, but adding a touch of arts. So I have a lot of fun.
So I think that sort of leads us into what you're doing online. So I know that you're sort of launching a school. You've got so many irons in the fire. It's unbelievable. Oh, there I go again. Didn't even do that. Didn't even do it on purpose. Oh my gosh. But But I just feel like, you know, you've sort of expanded recently. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, I decided to take a break or actually put an end to the fireworks. So on November 15th, I just retired and I've actually been able to say yes to everything quilting. So it's been so exciting. I've always had these dreams on my dream board that I've wanted to start. So, and one, like over the pandemic, I really sat back and had a realization about what do I love to do the most? And I really missed my podcast because that was between 2013 and 2015. So I thought I'm starting that sort of bucket list item up again. And I really want to get into the stories of these quilters I love. And then the other thing that was really missing was my creative, personal creative element of my life. I was running in so many directions, I wasn't creating anything myself. So I decided to start at the Q Creative membership. So I would be focused on doing a monthly project surrounded by people that I loved and they could come along and play with me. So that's really why I got back into that. I just wanted to do what I love most. And I think if you're doing what you love the most, that's how you share your passion the best with other people. So
explain, what is it, the Q monthly?
The Q Creative. Yeah, the Q Creative membership is a monthly membership where you get a 2-hour monthly live fiber art project with me. It includes, obviously, the replay. Everything goes into the vault. So once you're in the membership, you have the vault. And so you get the PDF, the project download, and the live with me. And then also, there's a whole bunch of extra bonuses. So they get my podcast bonus. So at the end of every podcast, I ask bonus questions. That doesn't go out to the world. That only stays in the membership. And I also do the Q Talks lecture series. So those are $15 each. But if you're in the membership, you get them for $10 each. And so also we have a community in there. So all month long, we're in the community. We can ask questions. We show our finished projects and we just have a lot of fun. So, and it's only, you know, the founding members only pay $10 a month to get in. The next, when I open it up in the spring, the next members, it's only going to be $15 a month. So it's really inexpensive, the price of a pattern, really. And you get to have this fun community. So I'm really looking forward to expanding it and growing it throughout the year.
I love that. Yeah. And also, you know, I think our listeners would really love your podcast too. And that's really one of the main reasons I wanted to have you on the show was, you know, to sort of expand the audience and hopefully get you some more listeners. Just because I love that you sort of do, like we're very conversational and we sort of are, you know, like we'll talk about anything. I feel like yours is very focused and you have one guest and you talk for the entire episode and there's like rapid fire questions and there's all kinds of sort of a deep dive into that person's story.
Yeah. I have so much fun with my podcast. I can't even tell you. And I get such good feedback when I get a email from a listener. I'm dancing around my house. My husband is like, ooh, saying something nice now. It's so fun. And so really what I do on my podcast is it's all about the story. So I actually get listeners telling me who they want coming up in the future. And I have had so many famous quilters, everything from famous quilters like Ricky Tins and Alex Anderson, all the way down to just a regular mom she's doing this amazing thing at home, raising a child, working in the military, doing all this stuff. But she made a coat of many colors for her daughter for Christmas, which was a quilted coat. So I have such a nice range of guests. And I feel like the famous quilters feel like your friend. And the quilters who are not so famous feel like all of a sudden they're in the spotlight and they feel really great too. So it's a really nice mix. And I'm just having so much fun. It really is opening up the doors to seeing what you don't know about. Like, so if you're listening to the podcast, you might hear a whole story about surface design or a whole story about, you know, how you can be a better precision piecer or how to be ergonomic in your quilt chair. You know, there's so many different topics depending on who we have on the show. We're just having a lot of fun.
And can I just say, your voice is so soothing. Like, I love listening to you. Like, I just feel like I get transfixed. Like, you just pull me right in and you keep me the whole entire time. So it's awesome.
That is so sweet. I actually had one listener send me a note that said, I listen to you when I walk every day and your voice sounds like butter. And I asked my husband, does my voice sound like butter? And he goes, not when you're yelling at me. Like, what? Yeah, it's so sweet. I just love getting feedback, whether it's good or bad, like doesn't matter. I learn from it or it just makes me feel so good when someone tells me what they think of the podcast. I love that.
So I'm kind of curious, being the firefighter side of things, how did they feel about you getting so, like, did you make quilts for them? Did they know what you did? You know, what was their reaction? Because that's such a different world.
Yeah, it's really funny. I kind of had this secret quilting life when I was a firefighter. So back in the early days, I would bring a quilt in to that I needed to bind. And we do have downtime as firefighters. So I'd be sitting up in the fire station on my bed in the dorm, you know, behind this big bunk of lockers. And I'd be hand, you know, binding a quilt. And I would go down later for dinner and they'd be like, oh, there she's up there knitting again or whatever she's doing. But yeah, it was always a big joke. They never really understood. But I loved it. And I did it anyway. And, you know, I don't actually think any, I have, you know, so many firefighter friends, and boy, can firefighters cook. Oh my goodness. I've had the best meals on earth.
Oh yeah.
But I don't think any of them really know. Some of the female firefighters do, but yeah, they don't really know what I do in my sort of secret life.
Ah, well, hopefully they'll find out because they're going to be blown away.
You never know. I actually had one really, really good story. I had one captain who was the most incredible captain, Captain Grayston. And he always let me choose what drill was because I was the rookie at the time. You know, lowest on the totem pole, you get to choose what the drill is and then you learn. So after he retired, my husband took me to this secret spot for our anniversary. I didn't know where we were going, downtown Winnipeg in the core area. And we went into this back alley and into this dance studio. And I was like, where are we going? And we opened the doors and we're ready to have a meal. And there's a dance where they put dance shoes on us. So we're learning to dance. We're having a meal and then we're watching the instructors. So who comes around the corner but my captain of my fire station, who's retired? He grabbed me and he was so excited and we learned to dance together. And then he said, don't you dare tell anyone. So he had a bit of a secret life too.
That's awesome. So I remember right before, I'm going to sort of go back to Houston. Lori got there before I did. And I just remember all of the hubbub about you meeting Lori. So can you tell us a little bit about how you were feeling?
Oh my gosh. When Terry told me that I was going to meet Lori Baker, I was like, okay, I need to go make the bed first. And I need to, like, what's happening right now? So Lori and her sister came and we had a lovely dinner together. And I was just so, I don't know, I was like trying not to be a fangirl. And she just has this history of quilting that is just, you know, it's profound. I don't know. I was just blown away. And so she started talking and I think I was pretty quiet for the first little bit, but then all of a sudden she unleashed this babble in me and I was like, oh, I'm so excited to meet you. She introduced me to Vivica and it's just been wonderful ever since. But yeah, it's just such a joy because, you know, I don't think we always appreciate the people in our industry who have been doing it for decades and decades, and they have paved the way for all of us. So, Lori, I just really appreciate you, and it was such a pleasure to meet you.
Oh, and it was such a pleasure to meet you, too.
We laughed and laughed and laughed at that dinner table. It was so much fun.
Yes, we did.
Well, I definitely know when I asked about how it went and everything, you were the first thing they mentioned, so...
Well, I'm telling you, I learned how to mix new drinks. I had more chocolate. I had more chocolate than I've ever eaten on a trip ever, but I just kept buying it and it was so fun. We had a blast.
Oh. Brandy does not like Manhattans.
No. It's got to be always learning.
Yeah, maybe, you know? Maybe it would have been better if it was like a Canadian maple syrup type of drink. I don't know.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, that was a hoot. And I got to be with Brandy when someone recognized her voice as they walked by us.
Oh my gosh.
It was pretty impressive.
I've got to give a shout out to this listener because now I know her. We are online all the time. Her name's Mary Lynn. And I was fangirling over Tracy Moody. Who, but by the way, I have to tell you what I call her for my nickname because when I accidentally put Tracy in my, I got to tell this story. I accidentally put Tracy in my contacts as Tracy Money. So now every time I get a text or I think about her, I'm like, money, 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 money. And so anyway, I'm sitting here for lunch with Tracy Mooney and I'm trying not to be a fan and she's trying to convince me to eat alligator or what were we eating? Crocodile?
Yeah, we were eating alligator. It was pompanos. There's pompanos mentioned, Sunner. Mm-hmm. And I didn't quite realize that, you know, Brandy's a little bit timid. And so I was sort of pushing her in like all different directions, like especially around like food and drink.
I'm a real meat and potatoes type of gal, like Canadian, like farm country gal. And so anyway, so we're eating this alligator or crocodile and this person comes up and I'm thinking, oh, someone's recognizing Tracy. And then she turns to me and she's like, are you the quilter on fire? I was just basically, I'm looked at her. I'm thinking to myself, are you kidding me right now? Someone is recognizing me. I couldn't believe that someone in, you know, the bottom of the USA is recognizing me from way up in Canada. It was just, it was really, really joyful. And we've been connected ever since. We've been, you know, back and forth on Facebook. So it's been really fun.
I find it really fascinating, like especially when I talk to you, sometimes it's interesting to me to beyond the walls of quilting. Like I feel like within quilting, we speak the same language, but sometimes in other areas, there's like a translation thing. Like even if I tell her what temperature it is here, we've got to convert it. Right.
Yeah. Right.
And things like that. And so I am intrigued because I get to work with, you know, a few designers in Canada. But tell us a little bit about like what the quilting world is like there. How does it differ from, you know, America?
You know what? I don't know if there's a lot of things that are exactly the same. But what I find across Canada is that we really love our own. So when we are, when we have a quilting guild, for instance, we really try to hire a Canadian teacher first. And we really try to create communities around that. And so once a teacher comes, whether it's virtual or in person to a guild, it's almost like they're an honorary member of the guild from now on. And we know them so well and we can keep reaching out to them. And it's not like you come in, you're the superstar and you're gone. You know, in the US, I find things are just a little bigger here and there. And even if you have someone famous come in and teach, you might not have a connection with them anymore because they're so busy. And, you know, but in Canada, things are just a little bit more, maybe I just, the word might be comfortable. I don't know, but we have a really, really robust quilting community all across Canada. We have one big national show every June, and that is just a wonderful show. And it changes all across Canada. So people get to go to it, even if they can't go every year. And yeah, it's just, it's a community that, especially with Quilts of Valor and things like that, we have that as well up in Canada. And those communities are just so strong. We have huge sew-alongs and quilt-alongs. The virtual guild, the virtual sort of retreats have just exploded over the pandemic. So I'm actually taking a whole weekend this weekend and doing the virtual retreat that I wrote the children's picture book at. So the original retreat, because that's a true story. Fine. So the Pinewood Lodge is the original retreat that I wrote the children's book, Christie's Quilt. And Christie was the daughter of the lodge owners. So it's a true story. And so I'm actually doing that retreat this weekend virtually, even though I live all the way in BC now. I don't live back in the Central Prairies anymore in Manitoba. So, so nice to be able to do that retreat again.
I'm kind of curious because I have in my mind what I think the Canadian quilt police would be like. And I don't know if I would be right
Mounties.
I was just going to say, I was like, envision them in big hats and just being really nice about their critiques. Am I wrong? Is there a Canadian quilt police or do they not exist?
Well, we do have quilt judges up here, but I don't know. I mean, I've trained in Canada to be a quilt judge. And I actually kind of compared to the, I'm taking this amazing judging program in the USA called NACQJ. I'm an apprentice and I am absolutely having so much fun. These women are incredible. But what I'm finding is they're all in it for the same reason. They're all there to be educational and share the good, you know, how to the foundation of quilting and how to create a quality quilt that's going to last and how to educate rather than being judgy. You know what I mean? I sort of think of myself as the gentle judge. And I really enjoy talking to people about their quilt, but giving them value rather than, you know, telling them, what were you thinking? I mean, I would never do that, right? So, we do have quilt police, absolutely. But yeah, if I did encounter that, I think I would be sort of, nope, I can do what I want to do. So you don't have a say in what I make as a quilter. But when it comes to judging, I really think it has to be educational. I'm in judging actually to create my own lifelong journey of learning. And I'm really in it to improve myself as a quilter. And like I said earlier, if I didn't know how to make a cathedral window, I would just sit down and make one so that if I have to judge it one day, then I know what I'm talking about, right? So yeah, I hope that answered your question. I was kind of straying around a little bit.
Yeah. They're nice.
Yeah. We do say sorry a lot.
That's
what I envision.
Like,
yeah, we do say sorry a lot.
Sorry. Yeah. Sorry, yeah. But your quilt is really ugly.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. All right. So, Brandy, this is the point of the show where I want to talk about, like, is there anything that you're working on that you want our listeners to know about?
Yeah, there's so many fun things. But, you know, I have this new thing coming on my website. I'm really excited about it. I have a very best friend who I took to a quilt show one time, and she saw a quilt in the back of sort of a quilting booth. And she just went up to the shop owner and said, oh, I'll take that quilt. And the shop owner said, oh, honey, you don't just buy the quilt. You have to buy the pattern and you have to make it. So I secretly made her that quilt as a gift later, a couple of years later. So she was thrilled about that, but she did not have a crafty bone in her body. Recently, though, for my 50th birthday, she gave me this bracelet that had this gorgeous quilterly design on it, and I fell in love with it. And she decided this is going to be her thing, and she started making these bracelets. So now she has made so many that I'm about to launch them on my website. So her little tagline there is, I believe every woman deserves a little sparkle in her life. And her name's Lori Bruce Smith. So she's one of my best friends, and she has a line of quilterly bracelets, and I'm going to launch those right away on my website. They'll be out by the time this podcast airs.
Yay.
So we'll put a link to your website, okay, of course, and to your courses and all of that, and your membership group. And I just want to, you know, preface the bracelets. We'll have a photo in the show notes, but they're beaded. They're just beautiful.
Oh. Yeah. They're completely handmade.
Yeah. Yeah. And they look like they are worth a lot more. Yeah. I can't even imagine how long it takes her to make one.
Oh, I don't even know. I'm thinking it's something like 9 hours or something. It's crazy. Yeah. If she sat down start to finish. Yeah. And they're just gorgeous. And they come in all different colors and the designs are beautiful. You can check them out on the website. I'm sure that there will be one that you fall in love with.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, Brandy, thank you so much for joining us today on the show.
It's been such a pleasure. And Ginger, I'm so excited to have met you. It's been such a fun time. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, yes, such a pleasure.
So as of the recording date of our episode, something pretty controversial has happened in the quilting world. So a prominent person in our industry made a video about the use of quilts in garments like coats. The video was pretty strongly worded, and the person claimed that she spoke on the behalf of all quilters. So when the three of us started to discuss the topic, we realized that our opinions were quite different from those that were presented. So what better topic for fine finishes as a controversial topic than using quilts to make garments, and is that acceptable? So I want to just go on the record before we even start talking that these are our personal opinions as Lori, Tracy, and Ginger. We are not representing our company or our brands or anything like that. This is just a couple of quilters chatting about this particular topic.
We do not represent all quilters.
Oh.
Blanket statement.
Blanket statement. Blanket statement. Ah.
I'm full of zingers.
Blanket statement. So I would never in a million years claim to speak for all quilters because I just feel like we all come from such different backgrounds. Mm-hmm. Like, what? Okay, so does anyone want to go first?
Oh, my goodness. Well, and I think I feel as if I got the ball rolling only because this video appeared and I sent it to Tracy. And Lori, I don't know if I copied you on it or not, but
no,
I definitely.
Sent it on Instagram.
Yeah. And I was like, I know what I think. but I want to know what they think. And I was just curious because I honestly wasn't quite sure. You guys definitely come from a little bit more of a traditional background and you have a lot more quilt history. So I was, you know, I was curious just to see. And when I got you guys' responses, I was like, yay, I know my people. I mean, not that we, you know, I think we all do have a varying opinions on certain aspects of it, but I think at the core of it, you know, and Tracy, I don't know if you want to get more into some of the details about the video that really did get everybody so irate.
Okay.
Breathe.
All right. I'm going to breathe because, you know, it was the video itself was very, how do I even put this into words? She had a lot of feelings and had a lot of points. But I'm going to start off by a couple of things. So she referred to the whole quilt coat thing as a trend. Mm-hmm. It is not a trend. This has been around for years and years. Like people have been turning quilts into clothing for, I'm pretty sure that's how quilts actually started.
Yeah.
Was that like knights started like stitching fabric together to make like things to go under their armor, you know, like it even goes back further than that. Okay. So it's not a trend. And even Emily Bode was the designer that she initially talked about sort of bringing up this trend. Well, she's been making quilted garments for 5 years, I think. So just, it's been beyond a trend. And then she also sort of gave the impression that this had gone so mainstream that we were going to start seeing quilted coats in Target. You know, like that's the impression that I got. So that is clearly not happening. Although Target is actually taking quilt patterns and printing it onto fabric and then making dresses and making coats and things like that. So you can actually get a print currently, I think, that a double wedding ring, but it's just fabric that's printed with double wedding rings.
Yeah. And it is super cute.
So there's that. Then another thing that I just sort of want to touch on briefly. And I hope that this doesn't, you know, like make some people turn this off, but she mentioned appropriation of quilt culture. And just to sort of explain what that is, when you're talking about cultural appropriation, you're talking about one dominant culture taking something that is important to another culture and making money off of it. And as a white woman, a white heterosexual woman, talking about quilting, I don't think that this applies remotely. And I also found it a little bit offensive that in her talk, she talked about women making money from quilting, but she didn't talk about like our quilters come from every background under the sun. There are men, there are women, there are people of color, there are Native Americans who've been making quilts for years. And that was never mentioned in her video. And so I just want to make sure that, you know, people are aware of that, you know? And then I also just want to say that, you know, the cutting up of quilts, while it can be, you know, it can upset you if you see a quilt that's beautiful, that you see someone turn it into something else. I get it. I'm a human. I understand. Sometimes I wince and I go, oh God. This is not a scalable thing for manufacturers to do. And actually, I spent a lot of time on Sunday looking at comments and what people were saying. And there was actually one person, and I went back today to try and find the comment, but it was buried and I couldn't find it exactly. So I just want to mention that there was one person who said that his business, I believe it was a man, has been to go to Goodwill on the day that they are about to bale up the clothes and send it to the landfill. And he gets notified when there are quilts coming up. And over the years, this has been his business. He goes there, he gets the quilts that are usable, and then he sells them to antique dealers. And he said previously, he was only able to save maybe 1 out of 10 quilts. And now, because people are using them and buying the cutter quilts is what we talk about, damaged quilts, right? He can save 10 out of 10 because people will buy the damaged quilts now and turn them into something else. I don't see that as anything but good.
Yeah. No. And I definitely think that that is something, putting it into perspective like that, I feel like was not in that video. Like, yeah. It was just like, no, it's wrong no matter what, you know.
Quilt police.
Yes. And honestly, that was my biggest beef with the whole time is I just, if I was a brand new person coming to the quilting world and saw that video, I would run so far away from the quilt community. I would be like, I don't want anything to do with that. It was so judgy. It was so just not what I had experienced coming in as a quilter, where I was fully embraced in all my ideas and there was just, you know, nothing holding me back. And to me, that was the biggest issue I had with it. Like the whole time, the amount of judgment, the amount of just flat out prissiness, like just, you know, that's to me, that's the bad vision that people have of quilters that I've yet to come across. And honestly, to see it so blatantly, like that was super upsetting to the point where my husband was like, what is wrong with you? And I just like, just going crazy. And he was like, really? Like, really? This is upsetting you that much? And yeah, it was tough. It was definitely tough. But yeah, I definitely think, and I think I've mentioned this on the podcast before, that I probably don't have the popular opinion, but I do feel like if a quilt, rather than going in a landfill, I would much rather see it turned into something useful that somebody can wear. And I don't see anything wrong with that. And I don't, like I said, I know it may be not the most popular opinion, but I would rather see a quilt go on and do things. And I know, Lori, you've had experiences with past quilts as well.
Yeah, I've actually got two stories. One of them, my mother-in-law made us a quilt, and it was lovely, and it was pastel. And I used it for the bedspread on my bed, the master bedroom. We have 5 children and a dog. And it was probably a decade, but it started, yeah, it was so worn that the batting was actually coming out through the holes in the fabric.
Lots of love.
And I threw it away. And I regret that. Yeah. I wish that I'd had the idea of cutting it and making a coat.
But imagine, maybe somebody grabbed it before it went into the landfill and now it exists somewhere else.
Maybe so. And then the other one, for one of my kids, for their wedding present, I made them a wonderful, wonderful quilt. And probably 3 or 4 years later, so you know it was still in pretty good shape, mm-hmm. The son was smoking in bed and fell asleep. And woke up to the quilt in flames.
Oh, no.
So he ran outside carrying the quilt and threw it in the snow and then threw it away. And it's another one that I'm betting there were pieces and parts that could have made a wonderful coat. I had quilts for my grandmother. The same thing. When they got worn out, what do you do with a quilt that has holes in it big enough that it won't keep you warm anymore?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Well, I keep thinking about, like, every time I see a garment that I, you know, think, oh God, why did they cut it up? I think, you know what? I don't know that the dog didn't chew the corner. I don't know that there, you know, something happened to the, you know, some part of it where it wasn't usable. So who am I to judge, you know?
Yeah.
But I also, go ahead, Ginger.
Well, and I don't know. And I guess I look at it like, because I love quilting so much, and anytime even remotely shows an interest, oh my God, I'm all over it. Mm-hmm. And for me, it was like when I started to see people outside of the quilting industry talking about quilted stuff. Oh my goodness. I was just so excited to see us get love. And to push people away that are interested, I'm like, we're missing an opportunity here. I was like, we could teach the people that want these quilted coats the craft. And we're just completely, instead of doing that and embracing them, we're just saying, no, you can't do that. Go away, you know? And that's not going to grow our industry. That's not going to keep quilts alive. And so, yeah, it's I don't know. I say, anybody wants to talk quilting, I'll do it in a heartbeat and I'll show you anything.
Right. Right. You know, I think that we need to acknowledge that this is a trend for younger people. Mm-hmm. And And I was talking to, I'm not going to name names, but a person who works for one of the big quilting cotton houses, you know, like fabric houses. And she said her opinion was, you know, any way that someone picks up needle and thread and it gets them eventually into a fabric store, I am all for.
Oh, right? Absolutely.
So mm-hmm. we really need to think about how we're encouraging young people. And if this is the way that they're intrigued to learn how to sew, then have at it. I mean, I have seen people, young people taking sleeping bags from Goodwill, you know, the ones mm-hmm. with like the princess sleeping bags and stuff, and turning them into puffer coats. And they're awesome. Lori, do you remember back in the 90s, there was a whole trend that you could literally go to Macy's and buy a quilt that was made in China. And it was hand stitched and like hand quilted, and it was $45.
Wow.
And there was a whole big brouhaha because those quilts were cheapening our work, and people couldn't make as much money making a quilt and selling it. And oh my gosh, what was going to happen down the road when people thought that this was an actual quilt? Well, you know what? Those quilts are showing up at Goodwill.
Right.
And I don't know about you guys, but when I go to the thrift, my daughter loves to thrift. Mm-hmm. And so when I go with her, I always check the line of, you know, like of mm-hmm. of a bedding and all of that to see if maybe there's a quilt in there. Because every once in a while you find one.
Yeah.
And I think maybe I could save it. I've got 3 quilts at least that the batting is falling out. I bought them because I took a whole class on antique quilt restoration, and my plan was that I was going to learn how to fix the quilts. Well, it is literally 20 years later, and I still don't haven't fixed them. They're still there, and still the batting's falling out, and the patches are, you know, torn, and you know all that. So maybe I turn those into a coat. Save the good parts in some way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've actually told my children that I want them to use the quilts I give them.
Yeah.
And if they wear out, so what? They wear out.
Mm.
Ginger said the other day, it'd be really fun to know that one of her quilts was worn and made into a coat. And I agree with that.
Yeah.
What better compliment for a worn out quilt than uh-huh. I want to save it enough to at least make a coat out of it. Okay, yeah. Cool.
Even when I looked at the hashtag that was like quilt coat hashtag, there were hundreds and hundreds of quilt coats. There were maybe 2 or 3 that it made me go, oh, why did they do that? The rest of them, I was like, oh, yeah, that's pretty ugly. Perfect for a coat, you know?
Yeah. Like,
not to mention, I just want to also mention how many people out there are making quilts to make a coat.
Coat, right, yeah.
Specifically for that.
Mm-hmm.
I can see doing that. You know,
mm-hmm.
do one block that's a complicated block for the upper right-hand side mm-hmm. of the jacket and another complicated block for the lower left-hand side of the jacket, and then a big block for the back and the rest of it, a background fabric, and then quilt the heck out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Be awesome.
Right? That'd be amazing.
Yep. I love it when my 2 worlds collide.
Well, yeah. You know, and how many garment sewers are even come over to quilting because they want to learn how to do that? So,
yeah. I don't know. Well, I just know my introduction to quilted clothing is really kind of a funny one. I loved going to the jam bands when I was like, I would go to these festivals like before Bonnaroo even was like even thought of. I was like out in the middle of the fields in Brandywine, Maryland, going to the, you know, festivals and seeing these bands that are huge now. And that was the biggest thing, was these vendors would be there and they had these, I don't think they took quilts and cut them up, but it was still quilted
like
clothing.
Patchwork.
It was patchwork. Yeah, it was patchwork pants. My husband has, he still has them. They're his most favorite thing. These just long, they almost look like a dress on them. It's hilarious now that I look at them. And and I still married him. And but But that was like, that was a huge thing. And when I was watching that video, they were showing pictures of like just all these different types of clothing and then really judgmental about them, super judgmental. And I was like, there is a group of people that that is fashion for them. That is like something that they love to do. And it's like, yeah. So, So when I see that, I get like warm and fuzzies because it reminds me of a time when I had a lot of fun. And so when I think of quilted clothing like that, that to me is just, it's pure memory, great memories.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we could probably talk about this forever because, I mean, how many, and even Lori, how many quilters have we seen over the years who specifically, like, specialized in quilted clothing? There used to be a whole, like, show at Houston that was like a whole runway. They had a whole runway show.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. And one vendor in particular that I remember that had quilted vests, quilted dusters, quilted jackets. I actually had two of her vests. They were pretty cool.
Nice.
Yay.
All right. Well, I don't think this is the last of this subject that we are going to be dealing with. And I feel like this was a therapy session. Thank you.
It was a lot. So those of our listeners who are actually still here, we appreciate that you stuck around and listened. And we certainly, please feel free to, you know, send us an email, or I usually post on Instagram. You can always leave a comment there. If it's something that, you know, we didn't mention or you disagree, that's fine too. Oh, yeah. I mean, I think everybody's got their own opinions and it's okay because we're all different. Well, it has been just an absolute pleasure, although a little stressful today. So we will talk next time.
Yay. Can't
wait. All right. Bye-bye, guys.
Bye.
Thanks so much for listening to Quilt and Tell. Remember, you can find more information about our sponsors or what we talked about today in our show description. If you haven't already subscribed, find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. And please tell your friends. Thanks for listening and happy quilting. The Quilt and Tell podcast is produced by me, Tracy Mooney, and our executive producer of podcasts is Jared Mayer.
It's time for Fine Finishes, brought to you by Handy Quilter. Handy Quilter long arm quilting machines and accessories. Your host is Ginger Sheehy Tattick.
Joining me today is Carly Porter, and you can find Carly at carlyporter.com. She is a force of nature, like I have to say, honestly. And Carly, thank you so much for joining me today.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me.
The reason I call you a force of nature is I love the fact that you're pretty brutally honest, and it's something to be appreciated within this industry. And I think, you know, I really appreciate the fact that you don't hold back. You really tell people what you think. And honestly, I think that's why you've done as well as you've done.
No, well, thank you. I think as an adult, I've learned that one of my core values is honesty. And now the other value I'm really working on is tact. So I try to be as honest as possible, but hopefully brutally honest has a good connotation that comes with a little bit of love with it too.
No, it does. It honestly does. And honestly, I feel like if our industry had a little bit more of that, I think we'd be so much further along.
Yeah. Well, you know, I just think like life is so short. I don't know how much time I've got, and I would rather just rip off the Band-Aid and say what I need to say and move on instead of holding things inside of me. So I just try to be honest, and hopefully that comes across like when I'm teaching classes and things, because the more honest that we are with each other, the more we can learn and grow together.
Definitely. You have brought to the industry something really unique. You are probably the biggest expert on graffiti quilting. Tell us how this all kind of came about and explain the technique as well.
Okay, so graffiti quilting, so if I could give you the elevator pitch of it, it's the act of taking tons of different motifs and smashing them together all into one quilt. And the nice thing about graffiti quilting is it was kind of really born out of rebellion, just like the connotation with graffiti. Kind of had the same thing within the quilting industry. When I was a really young quilter, I started quilting when I was 18, and I learned that the quilt police are very strong and forceful in the do's and don'ts of quilting. And I learned that the more I learned of what the don'ts were, quote, I'm using air quotes right now, the don'ts of quilting were, the more I wanted to break those rules, kind of out of rebellion. But I also found that the more I broke those traditional rules, the more interesting and beautiful my free motion quilting became. And that's how graffiti quilting was born. And I have a background in art that I consider myself an artist first and a quilter second, because I've always been an artist and always will be, but I happen to be hooked on fabric and thread right now. But the style of graffiti quilting, or the aesthetic of it, I was drawing in my sketchbooks for years and years and years as a kid. And when I got into quilting and learned how to quilt, I just started applying all of these same design elements with fabric and thread, and through the process showing them to, you know, very traditional quilters. I ruffled a lot of feathers, and it became kind of this whole new free motion quilting technique that was very, very outside of the box, kind of me looking from the outside into the quilting industry and kind of providing something really new and fresh. And I found that quilters either really loved it and embraced it, or it was so out of the mindset of a traditional quilter that it was unpalatable, which I also really like. I think if everybody is pleased all the time, then you're not pushing enough boundaries.
Yes. And it's so funny. I love the fact that you did ruffle some feathers. And Carly, I have to tell you that you have been a true inspiration, at least for me as a quilter. I think you definitely raised the bar as far as, like, you know, just taking things to a whole new level and being able to see your quilts in person. I feel honored that I've been able to do that. And I feel like if anybody has a chance, please go check out her website, check out her work. It is amazing. And if you ever get the chance to take one of her classes, I highly recommend that too.
Oh, you are so sweet. Thank you. Yeah. If you want to check out my online classes, I teach online free motion quilting classes. You can go to carlyporter.com, and under the education tab of my shop, you can see what classes I've got planned and going on.
You can also catch Carly at, if you go to quiltingdaily.com, and in the subscription, you were a part of the Quilt It series. And yes, she dives in even deeper on the episode that she's in the final season of it. So if you want to hear more about Carly's story, you can definitely check that out there too.
And that's it for today's Fine Finishes, brought to you by Handy Quilter. To find out more about Handy Quilter's fine line of products, visit their website, handyquilter.com. Until next time, good night and good luck with your quilting.